RadioInfluence.com.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard him.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he sports the top. Whoa. You think it's a mission? And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the Thanksgiving Eve edition of the MMA Report podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd. Come here on this week's edition of the podcast. We're going to talk about what we're thankful for in MMA. We'll talk about the price point for Saturday's Golden Boy pay-per-view being headlined by Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz. We'll take a look back at UFC Argentina, Bellator 209. Talk about the comments Dana White made to TMZ earlier this week about Daniel Cormier. We'll also have four interviews for you. Hear my conversation with Eric Anders, Martin Day, Kevin Seiler, and Dom Merriwer. Plus, we're going to preview UFC Beijing, which, of course, takes place on early Saturday morning. If you're going to get up for those on the East Coast, those prelims start at 3:15 a.m. Eastern time. Main card at 6:30. But if you're going to be like me, you wake up, make sure you're up by about 7:30 or so you can see that main event for Curtis Blaydes and Francis Ngannou. Of course, you can always check out this podcast on RadioInfluence.com. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. Really would appreciate it if you would give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. But Daniel, we are talking here. It is Thanksgiving Eve morning. And we want to start off by talking about the things we're thankful for in MMA. And I'm going to tell you, there's two things I'm thankful for in MMA. A, it's all the people that listen to this podcast. It amazes me every month when we see the growth of this show and how many people listen to this podcast. And I'm also thankful for all the fighters that give me time to interview them and have them on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you to both those groups. I mean, the fighter interviews are probably the best part of the podcast. And I must say, when I see the numbers, I'm very excited. You know, I'm like, man, more than just my grandmother listens to this thing. So I appreciate both you guys. And I would say, in addition to that, I want to, like, I don't know about you, Jason, but I don't appreciate things until they're gone. That's just the way I work, you know. That's like I didn't appreciate the role Drake and Josh, the TV show, had in my life until – that's more of a millennial thing, Jason, until it was gone. And I will say this. I also didn't appreciate like how awesome the jalapeno bacon poppers at Buffalo Wild Wings were until they were gone from the menu. They were just gone. And I was so – and I've been sad ever since. There's been a void. So I just want to say I am thankful for the UFC flyweight division. I know it didn't draw, Jason, but I am thankful for the fact that it gave us Demetrius Johnson. It gave us one of the best fighters pound for pound ever, potentially the best ever. It gave us the upset moment we all look for with Cejudo beating him. It gave us the perfect – you know, every division needs that John Fitch, right? It needs that guy who's like always considered – the number two in the division, but he can never win the title. It gave us Joseph Benavidez. It gave us so many exciting fighters, a fighter we just saw this past weekend with like Pantoja and so many others. It gave us a draw in like the tournament to crown a champion, and it gave us so much, Jason. So on its dying days, I just want to say I am very thankful for the UFC flyweight division.
Yeah, it's it's interesting to kind of see what really happens with the flyweight division and all of MMA. I mean, obviously we're seeing what one championship's going to do, but it's going to be very interesting to see if any other promotions really get into that business. But of course, coming up this weekend, we do have the inaugural Golden Boy MMA event, of course, headlined by Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz. And it was late last week. I want to say it was maybe Friday. I get this press release from Fight TV that notes that they are doing a Black Friday special for this pay-per-view. If you watch it, or if you order it on Fight TV on Friday from 4 p.m. Eastern time to 6 p.m. Eastern time. Now, this will correspond with the weigh-in stream on Friday on Fight. They're going to do the pay-per-view for $19.99. And, you know, when I saw this, and also it should be noted that Golden Boy has dropped the overall pay-per-view price to $39.99. I believe it was initially supposed to be $49.99. And, Dan, when I put this tweet out, the responses I received were pretty much 75% negative. You know, I was talking to somebody who's worked in the MMA industry about this, and they just said, look, there's not much that Oscar's going to be able to do to appease the hardcore MMA audience. But to me, when I look at 1999, like, if you're, we all understand what this pay-per-view is. It is a cash grab. We all understand that. But I feel like a price point of $19.99 is really where this pay-per-view should be.
Yeah, it's like an ultimate tease. Because a lot of people aren't going to be aware of this deal, I don't think. And it's like such a small window from 4 to 6, but it's like $19.99. If you're going to put this fight on pay-per-view, and again, reminder, this fight should not happen in general, just for the safety of both guys. That's my point. I'm sure you agree, right? Like, this fight should not be happening.
It should not be happening, but I'm torn on this one, okay? We want to see fighters make more money in all of MMA, not just UFC fighters, Bellator fighters, but all of MMA. We want to see more fighters make more money. And, you know, Tito came out this week and noted that he's getting 30% of the pay-per-views. And, you know, noted that when he's in the UFC, he was only getting 2 or 3%. So from that aspect, I'm like, God, I hope these guys cash in big time. But then there's the other side of this where I'm like, these guys shouldn't be fighting because of what it is. I mean, we all know why Chuck Liddell was forced to retire. We all remember that. And my thing on Chuck in this matchup is, if he still has a job in the UFC, I don't think he's fighting.
Yeah, I bet it's a money thing. It has to be because, it's a money thing, but also I know Chuck wants to get back in that cage again. I mean, how can you not when you're in the entertainment business? How can you not want to be a part of the spotlight again? That's just human nature. So I think it's a money thing as well as he has that itch to be a part of the folks again. I mean, this is a guy who's an absolute legend in the sport. You can't talk about the UFC without talking about his legendary run as UFC light heavyweight champion and Tito as well. But again, we're talking about 2008, 2009, 2010. It was in those years in which it was evidently clear that Chuck Liddell had to retire because of the way he got knocked out by Rashad Evans and Rich Franklin. It was those years, 8 years ago, when it was sad to watch him fight. And fortunately, he isn't going out there and fighting a stone-cold killer like Tito Ortiz, who is, you know, the thing is Tito is kind of in a similar boat. But Tito still has the ability to take him down and land ground and pound strikes, not to mention the toll I'm assuming training has taken on Chuck and Tito. Tito's still fighting. It's fine. But Chuck is the big one. As far as the price point, I mean, it's telling any time a pay-per-view drops their price at any point. So to me, the more telling thing is dropping to $39.99 because the first thought I had was, oh, God, I can't believe they had to drop the price at $39.99. How the hell did they think people were going to spend $50 on this show? Are you effing kidding me? I just think the moral of the thing is this Black Friday deal should have been the price for the pay-per-view at the beginning point because you got to know what you're selling, what it's worth. You know, me and you, we know this is a good podcast, but we're not going to sell it for $50 an episode. We would love to sell it for $50 an episode. That would be really bad. We would have $0 at the end of the day. Oscar De La Hoya should not be selling Tito Ortiz or Chuck Liddell for $40 or $50. I know there's a great deal, but that's not going to affect the buy rate too much because it's not – when people think of this pay-per-view, a lot of them I don't think are aware of that two-hour window to get that deal. And I just think this pay-per-view – might actually – I don't know if it would make more money if it started off in 1999 because at the end of the day, if you're selling it for $40, you know, one buy equals two buys. But I do think if the marketing and the pay-per-view started off at a $20 price point, I think the attitude towards potentially purchasing it as a freak show, I think that would lend itself to probably more buys at the lower price point than the $40 price point.
Look, we both know in terms of that Black Friday deal, it's going to be the people that are in the MMA bubble that are going to know what this deal is. I mean, when the 1999 price came out, I was like, you know what? Call me crazy. I might just buy this thing. And you would have came to me a month ago. There is no way in hell I would have said, I'm going to buy this thing. But I'll give you a, this is a true story. This is not anything absolutely true. So me and my three buddies I watched fight with, we have a group text or we text about whatever. I mean, I think everyone's kind of had these group texts. And so yesterday, Tuesday, I text him. I said, hey guys, thinking about getting the Liddell Ortiz fight on Saturday. Anyone want to come over and watch it? You want to know how many answers I got?
How many?
Zero.
Wow, that is, how many people were in this group chat?
There's three other people. Now, we watch UFC and Bellator fights together all the time, and because we were going back and forth yesterday kind of talking about when we can all get together to go to a Tampa Bay Lightning game. And maybe by the time Saturday gets here, I call me crazy, I'm probably going to take advantage of this deal on Fight TV for $19.99. I'll sit there and watch this card. I mean, I think ultimately where I think Golden Boy really dropped the ball here is they could have made a much better undercard than what they did. When you look at the rest of this undercard, we both love Tom Lawler. Great, great character. Taking on Deron Wynn. I mean, that's a fight that's not going to get people go, oh, hell yeah, I got to get, it's a nice fight. But when you look at the rest of it, you've got Efren Escudero versus Gleison Tibau. There's name value there. You know, Wael Watson's got a little name value. But when you look at this preliminary, this undercard that's going to be on pay-per-view, it's just, it's underwhelming. And that's where I believe Golden Boy just really dropped the ball on this one. Now, I do like the fact that the pay-per-view starts at 9 p.m. Eastern time. I like that.
That is very nice. And look, maybe at the end of the day, the moral of the story is your friends just don't like you, Jason. Like, maybe they were just ignoring you. Maybe they all agreed to watch Liddell and Ortiz. Well,
don't worry. They go, hey, let's go to Lightning game on Sunday. I go, hey, fellas, it's Sunday. You guys, you know what I do on Sundays.
You guys have been friends forever. and I think they should probably know that you got to watch the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know.
Hey guys, yeah, I'm kind of in a stadium on Sunday working a game.
Yeah. It doesn't really change too often, this whole NFL on a Sunday thing. I mean, occasionally we're on a Thursday, or occasionally, you know, we wow people with the game of the year on a Monday. But yeah, usually we work on a Sunday.
But, so as I was getting prepared for this show, I saw a piece that Aaron Bronster put up on his social media, and it was an interview he did with Oscar De La Hoya. You're going to hear the question that Aaron asked, and then you're going to hear Oscar's response. And Daniel, I cannot wait for you to hear this. So here is what Oscar De La Hoya said to Aaron Bronster.
You mentioned the buy rate. In terms of the buy rate, what would be the basement, the minimum amount of people tuning into this that would make the event a success in your eyes?
Well, I mean, 200, 300,000, 400,000 is a no-brainer. I mean, given the fact that they've been involved with huge events over at the UFC, like I said, they're pioneers, they're staples in the industry. People know Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz within the industry. See, the pay-per-view model is a whole different animal. If you're fighting on regular linear TV and fighting on pay-per-view, it's two different audiences. And the fact that they have a history within that pay-per-view audience is a big plus for everyone that's involved in this event. We feel that the fact that this event is taking place on the Thanksgiving weekend is a huge plus. We've had much success in the boxing industry when staging events during Thanksgiving, because families are home. Families want to have something to watch, something exciting to watch. So we're obviously hanging on to the fact that these two legends are in the same octagon during Thanksgiving weekend.
All right, Daniel. So what's your thoughts on what Oscar De La Hoya had to say there?
Look, Oscar De La Hoya must have taken some type of drug. Some type of drug before answering that. And that drug is just probably, I don't know. Like, lack of, I mean, are you effing kidding me? Are you kidding me? I'm going to throw an F-bomb on here. I'm going to just say 200,000, 300,000. That's your low point. That's your basement. Like, get ready to dig a doomsday shelter, because that's where you're going to be, under the basement. Like, this thing will probably not do over 100,000. I'm actually super confident. This thing will not do over six figures. This fight does not have any stakes. This fight does not feature guys who matter in 2018. This fight features nostalgic stars. This fight answers the question that like 12 people had. What would happen if Chuck Liddell came back? That's the question this fight is answering. There will not be hundreds or thousands of families on Thanksgiving saying, what should we do to pass the time? Oh, I know. Let me open up Fight TV and let's download Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz. This thing will not do more than 100,000 buys. The idea that you go out and you say that the low is 200,000 or 300,000 buys is you are admitting that you are stupid or you are BSing. One of the two. Either you do not understand the reality of the situation and what people are paying for, or you are completely BSing the guys. Look, man, in this world, there are receipts. And when the receipt comes in for the buy rate for this one, it's going to be far lower than 200,000.
I was thinking about this, of where if you were placing a betting line on the amount of pay-per-view buys, let's say you place a number at 70,000. Would you go over or under?
Under. Big time. This has this does not have momentum.
No, I agree with you. I mean, and one of the things, and we were texting about this last night, is we're already seeing a good amount of media coverage. I know MMA Fighting. I saw Josh Gross was there, and this fight on Saturday night might have more coverage than the UFC show on Saturday morning. And now I think that the time, you know, the fact that the UFC card is so early in the morning is going to play into it. And I think the fact of, you know, look, it's a fight card for the UFC that, you know, not a lot of name value there. Has a very good main event with Blades and Ngannou, but I kind of feel like you're going to see more coverage of this pay-per-view than you will see the UFC event.
Oh, I will say this much. Like, I'm pretty confident more people will watch the Liddell Ortiz fight live than will watch the fight night between Blades and Ngannou. I don't know what the numbers are for Fight Pass, but I do find it hard to believe that, you know, 80,000 people are going to be watching this China card live.
Let's be honest about it. We both know this. There is going to be a section of the MMA fan base that will not buy this fight, but they will be looking for streams of it, whether maybe it's Periscope or other things. I think we both can confidently say there will be fans. They see tweets that this fight's about to go. They're going to be going on the various platforms to try to find someone streaming this fight.
Yeah, that and most of the way most people will consume this fight, because these names are interesting. They just aren't interesting enough in the year 2018 to warrant great value, to warrant spending money, to warrant spending part of your Thanksgiving watching this instead of college football. But the way most of these people are going to consume this fight, and way more people are going to be aware of what happens between Liddell and Ortiz than what happens between Blades mm-hmm. and Francis Ngannou, they're going to consume it on social media, on various websites. Websites like Barstool will likely cover it. Hell, ESPN might even throw it on the headlines page after the result. You know, it will be on Twitter. It will be on Instagram. Something crazy. This will not go the distance, I think. But even if it goes the distance, that will probably be a headline in and of itself. So this is a pop culture thing. People will pay attention to it. It just does not mean they're going to spend the hard-earned money they have to buy it.
Now, I'm sure you, like myself, have seen the open workout of Chuck Liddell. And obviously, you know, doesn't look great. But why do I get this feeling Liddell is just trolling us with those workouts?
You think he's trolling us?
Oh, yeah. I think he's I had this thought this morning. I go, he has to be trolling us by showing how he's kicking and hitting. I just feel like he's got to be trolling us. I'm not saying I'm picking Chuck to win the fight. Because I look, you know, Tito's never been is not the one punch knockout guy. I mean, look, I think we both know Tito's going to go in there. He's going to look to, you know, to take Chuck down. But I mean, look, Chuck I think Chuck could knock him out. I mean, I don't think his power's gone away, but man, it's We saw what that chin was like for Chuck, you know, at the end. And, you know, you look, I say this, I go back. Chuck was never the same after he lost his title to Rampage. He was never the same.
Yeah, I'd be honest with you. I didn't see this workout video, and now I'm watching it. And this, yeah.
He's got to be trolling us. He has to be trolling us.
I don't, dude, there's no way he's trolling us.
He has to.
He's trying. Who trolls someone during a workout routine? Antonio McKee holding the pads. I think he's asleep.
Okay, here's the other thing, okay? Isn't it kind of weird that Chuck came to Huntington Beach to do his training?
Yeah, it's so funny.
That's where Antonio McKee is, and you know, Antonio is his head coach for this one. But man, by the way, I saw the tweets. I don't know if you saw this yesterday, that Antonio McKee said for a long time he thought Chuck was racist because there was only white people in his training team.
I mean, that's like such a weird statement. That's weird, man. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are racist people, but I just feel like, you know.
Yeah, this is Sean Alshadi had this tweet yesterday. He goes, 45 seconds of Tito talking, 45 seconds of Chuck talking. Antonio McKee admitting he initially thought Chuck was a racist, and Oscar De La Hoya saying of Tom Lawler, let me tell you, there's nothing but explosion written all over him. And Sean writes, the promotion of this event has been terrible. This was a quote from Antonio McKee. I thought Chuck was racist. I never saw anyone black in his camp. Yeah. So that was said yesterday. Now, but here's the thing about this fight. To me, it's like a car crash on the interstate. We've all been in this situation where you're on the interstate, it's bumper to bumper, and you're like, man, what the hell is going on here? Usually I'm hopping on my Waze app, seeing when it's coming up, and then it's that one car accident that's still there, and everyone's just looking. And that's what I feel like this fight is. It's a car crash that everyone just wants to peek in and see what might happen.
Yes, totally agree. People aren't going to peek in live for the money. Some will. I will. You just might. I'm pretty sure you will. I'm pretty sure you're going to make the deal. I'm pretty sure you're going to buy the
$20. Look, I'll be honest with you. I'm probably going to spend the $20 to watch Phil and Tiger on Friday.
Really? Wow, that I'm not doing.
See, this is my whole thing. The fact that they're talking about how these guys are being mic'd up, like, I'm not tuning in to watch the golf. I'm tuning in to watch these two guys trash talk each other. They've already got a side bet on the first hole.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, see, this is almost to the point of, like, I wonder, and I don't know whether both these guys, you know, enjoy adult cocktails. I'm pretty sure Tiger does. I don't know about Phil. But it would make that even better if they are drinking on the golf course. That could get real fun.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
But let's be honest about it. If something crazy is said on Friday between those two guys, it's going to be all over social media.
Yeah, it's a really strange event that I'm interested in for sure. I don't know if I like.
Okay,
a
strange event. That's Saturday night.
That's true. They might as well have Strange Brew. Jason. Oh God, what's his name from The Ultimate Fighter 1? Jason Thacker, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, they should have had Strange Brew on Strange Event because that is the perfect way to describe it.
I'm saying if you would have somehow made Eddie Chandler or Eddie Alvarez, Michael Chandler as a co-main event of this card, people would have been all in. That's where I think Golden Boy screwed up on this one is they had a chance to really do something special here. And I as I said earlier, part of me wants to see this thing succeed because clearly Oscar is trying to bring in the boxing pay in MMA. I hope this thing succeeds. But man, you know, you just wish it was done in a different way with not a guy who was, you know, is coming out of retirement for what, 8-9 years. And you know, look, he was told to retire because of getting knocked out the way he was. And that's, you know, that's why it's my problem with bare knuckle boxing is the fact that for the most part, they're trying to capitalize on older MMA fighters that, you know, shouldn't be fighting anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. That is the major issue because again, this is a sport that you compete in it for just the right amount of time. You're going to leave it. Really on a poor end of health long-term wise. I mean, this sport takes a toll. I mean, every fighter who spends any time training is sacrificing their long-term health, much like a professional wrestler or a boxer or, hell, a football player, a soccer player. I mean, there is a price to be paid. And when we see guys who are clearly fighting way past the point when they should be, it becomes sad. And that's what we get here. We don't get that Chandler Alvarez fight. I mean, that would have been an expensive fight to book, but I'm pretty confident that it would have paid off in terms of fight interest. It would have legitimized this event.
Yeah, it definitely would have. But let's move on past what we're going to see on Saturday night. Let's go back to last Saturday night, UFC Argentina. A big night for Santiago Ponza. Nibulo gets that just a dominating win against Neil Magny. Finally gets the knockout in the fourth round. I think even before the Herb team finally called the fight, you could have made a case for Herb to step in before he actually did, because Neil could not stand on his left leg. But Santiago Ponza Nibulo has now won 7 in a row. And I look at Santiago, and to me, he's put together a great winning streak. 7 wins in a row, second longest winning streak in the UFC welterweight division. And I wrote this down on our show notes, and let me see if you kind of agree with me on this one. Santiago Ponza Nibulo is a victim of the amount of UFC fights that happened. What I mean by that is this was his first fight in 11 months. People had forgot about what he had done prior to Saturday night until after Saturday night had ended.
It has been a very long time since the last time we saw Ponza Nibulo fight, and I totally agree with you. With a less amount of fights, maybe there's more oxygen in the room and there's more time to process the way he looked against Mike Perry, and also the way he completely destroyed Gunnar Nelson. Like, that to me is the best performance we have seen out of Santiago Ponza Nibulo up until the fight against Neil Magny. And this fight wasn't a quick finish, but it was a really controlling victory up until that fourth round. I mean, it all started I don't know if he poked Magny in the eye or punched him in the eye, but man, that really screwed up Magny's vision. And just from that point forward, even prior to that, though, Ponza Nibulo is clearly the better stand-up fighter of the two. And he really impressed me against a tough and talented fighter. And I get it, man. I mean, Santiago, incredibly talented in the 170-pound division. In a different day and age, his name would probably mean a lot more because there were less fights for people to consume. But he is still kind of lost in the shuffle. And even though we've seen him win 7 fights in a row, and those who watch him know he's great, it's going to probably take one more fight before he breaks through. It's going to have to take a big fight. I mean, for him, it's like, I mean, I don't know what's next for Santiago Ponza Nibulo. Personally, I think a fight against Darren Till would be interesting, but Darren Till's moving to middleweight. I mean, it's probably going to be the winner of Usman Dos Anjos. And also, I would mention that if you want to make Ponza Nibulo a star, I know he's fighting that lightweight, but a fight against Donald Cerrone, that's like an easy answer. Personally, I think he's going to fight Usman and Dos Anjos. But for Ponza Nibulo, it is kind of indicative of where we are in the sport. This guy has won 7 fights in a row. And when it comes to what he needs to do to become a name among casual fans, it's telling that he still hasn't done that yet, and he's going to probably have to win one more fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fight that sticks out to me is Stephen Thompson.
Ooh, that's a good one. That is a good one as well.
Just because when you look at the welterweight division, and right now, whatever your thoughts are on the UFC rankings, Santiago is number 7 now. So above him, Robbie Lawler, who will be taking on Ben Askren in January. Then it's Usman, who you mentioned, takes on RDA next week. Thompson doesn't have a fight book, as far as I know. I just did a brief search to say make sure to confirm what I thought. Then of course you got RDA, we mentioned, against Usman. Great, man, looking forward to that. That's a great fight. Can't wait to look for that next week. Then we got Darren Till, who you mentioned, going up to 180, most likely going up to 185. Then you got Colby Covington, who's the, I don't know if we still call him the interim champion or whatever the situation with that, but obviously they're going to do him and Woodley, it sounds like, sometime early on in 2019. So to me, the fight against Stephen Thompson is the one that really sticks out.
Yeah, yeah, and that to me is a fight that could bring out the excitement out of Stephen Thompson. I mean, a lot of Stephen Thompson's fights have either been amazing or really boring, lack of action. And I think Ponza Nibulo, it's so much fun to watch him fight. It was fun to watch him fight in the main event. I mean, he's just an enjoyable stand-up fighter. His leg kicks are absolutely lethal. And there are very few guys in the UFC welterweight division you look at and you say, I think they could outstrike Ponza Nibulo. Thompson's one of those guys where it's like, that's possible. I mean, personally, the fight I would have wanted to make if he wasn't booked against Ben Askren would have been Ponzinibbio versus Robbie Lawler. I just feel like that's like the perfect matchup for Ponzinibbio at this point in time. From his perspective, is like it's going to be a stand-up fight in all likelihood, and it's also a fight between a rising prospect and a guy who was a former champion, Robbie Lawler. So to be honest with you, that to me is the quote-unquote best possible fight for Ponzinibbio next. But unless Ben Askren gets hurt, that won't happen. So I'm really digging the Thompson pick. I know he called for a Usman RDA winner, but it's clear Ponzinibbio is at a point in his career where his next possible fight is going to be a guy who's above him in the rankings.
And I'm sure the UFC probably wants to maybe wait and see what happens with RDA and Usman to kind of see where they go there. Ponzinibbio Lawler, if you want to do that, you could also play in the whole, Robbie Lawler leaving ATT where Santiago trains at. That could play in there. Your main card, kind of the things that stuck out to me, Johnny Walker, man, brutal. Just brutal elbow knockout. It's two elbows, but really I think it's really the first one that really kind of ended it there for Khalil Roundtree. Ian Heisman, great win for him against Cesar Fajeya. Marlon Vera, not a great first round against Guido Canetti, comes back, gets a win in the second round. Cynthia Calvillo, nice takedown there, and with about 90 seconds to go in the opening round. Gets a submission win there, and Ricardo Lamas getting the TKO. But really what stuck out to me is that elbow by Walker and Vera responding after a bad first round.
Yeah, and God, this poor Argentinian crowd. I mean, their guy, Guido Canetti, looked freaking great in that first round, only to find himself on the losing end against Marlon Vera. Yeah, Johnny Walker's elbow. I mean, the game plan to take out Roundtree has been the wrestling, and that was not needed. Lamas versus Elkins. I mean, look, Ricardo Lamas is an incredibly talented 145-pound fighter. He is he's very underrated, I think, when you look at what he's accomplished. And against a tough guy in Darren Elkins, he's able to get the finish late in the fight. And, Cynthia Calvillo, dominant against Pollyanna Botello, but I mean really dominant, and Calvillo's a special talent. But it's telling. It is so telling also about where we are in the sport that we didn't lead the show with Cynthia Calvillo's weigh-in. It's telling how used to it we are, because I think 3 or 4 years ago, the lead of our show would have been the way Cynthia Calvillo looked when she weighed in and missed weight. She looked like she was going to pass out on the scale.
That was so tough to watch. I saw some people tweet about it, and then I watched the video, and I was just like, oh my God, this is awful. It was just awful to watch. And, the thing is, and I don't know if it was Brandon Fitzgerald or Jimmy Smith who know this on the broadcast, but you would have thought that since Calvillo missed weight, she would be the bigger fighter, physically in the fight. And she clearly wasn't. It was her opponent.
Yeah, totally. And I don't know what the answer is for Calvillo other than, like, for sure fight at 125. Because, like, I don't know what went wrong in this weight cut, but she didn't make the weight. And the way she looked was like, I mean, she looked sick, really sick. And I know that's what the process is. And that's kind of my larger point is, like, this wasn't completely out of the ordinary. That's why we didn't lead the show off with it.
Yeah.
But we're just so used to it. It's like, oh, my God, somebody's going to really, really mess themselves up. She couldn't change. She couldn't get back into her clothes in public sight. Yeah. And I know you dehydrate your body. I know how hard the process is. But if the process is this hard, it's got to change. And it won't. But, she didn't look like the bigger fighter against Pollyanna, But it just seems like the weight cut is too hard. And then the good thing is there's the 125-pound division. And, the good thing is I know Cynthia is smaller. She's going to get outsized with some of those fighters in the flyweight division. But, your health is so much more important than making weight and getting a size advantage.
Let's mention two other things before we move on to our next topic about UFC Argentina. Our biggest surprise of the night and biggest takeaway from the prelims. My biggest surprise of the night, I would have to say, Canetti, how good he looked in that opening round. Just did not see that coming. And probably my biggest takeaway from the prelims is got to be Michelle Prezeris, who clearly, look, this guy is from his body frame is not a 170 pound fighter, but the amount of success he's having at 170 is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's like he can't move. Like, I know he kind of wants to, but he can't. I mean, to me, that's a great call, man. And in addition to him, to me, the guy who stuck out to me on the prelims was Alexander Pantoja. I mean, the way he completely looked fantastic in his flyweight fight against Sasaki, it was like, man, this sucks for him because he's destined to be a champion one day, but it won't be in the UFC. I mean, maybe he will as a bantamweight. Wouldn't be surprised if he moves up. I guess my biggest upset shock was the Johnny Walker knockout. I mean, it wasn't like Johnny Walker is a massive underdog against Khalil Roundtree. He is a slight, slight dog. And the way that fight transpired, Jason, that to me was the biggest shock of the night.
Yeah, I had Roundtree on my DraftKings lineup, and I said it on my DFS show. I said, this is one of those picks you don't feel very good about just because it's just tough. It's tough to trust Khalil Roundtree. And we'll see what kind of happens with him, but that is UFC Argentina. Before we get into the interviews, I do want to mention a comment UFC President Dana White had to make to TMZ Sports, and I'm going to let you hear that comment right now as he was asked about Daniel Cormier.
Really quick, Daniel Cormier, he's only got a couple fights left, right? Who do you think, is this going to be his last fight with if he's going to fight Brock? Is that's going to happen?
I don't know. We don't know that either yet.
Right.
I think, yeah, Cormier's got a couple left in him.
And who do you think would be, you know, would there be a rematch of any kind in the making, do you think, for one of his
I hope
fights?
So. I mean, that was what I would like. I obviously like to see Jones and
right.
Cormier fight again at heavyweight. But, you know, right now, Cormier's team wants him to retire now.
Right.
They want him to retire right now. I hope we can get three more fights out of him.
Interesting comments there, Daniel, by Dana White, mentioning about, you know, Cormier's team. There's kind of some conflicting things I've seen out there about whether AKA truly wants, you know, Daniel to retire right now. But very interesting comments by Dana. But, you know, one of the things that kind of stuck out to me about this, you know, Dana's always been that guy of, well, if you're talking about retirement, you need to retire. But you notice with Daniel Cormier, he's not talking that.
Well, it comes down to whether or not you make money. And also, I don't know, damn, Daniel Cormier should retire. I don't even know how to give him that advice. Because the thing is, like, he's fighting, like, the best he's ever fought. And he is, like, what he could do for his long-term life. Well, here's the thing. This is the type of guy who's going to be fine if he retires today. I mean, again, he could theoretically beat the next Dana White. He's a guy with Fox Sports. You can put him in a broadcast booth. To be completely honest, money, not that big of an issue for him. He's going to make it because he's damn talented in so many different facets. But he has still not made the most money he could theoretically make in his career. The fight against Jon Jones, the fight against Brock Lesnar, those two fights will make him more money than he has ever made in his career. The idea of him fighting three times is a major stretch. That I don't see happening. I think he's only going to fight twice. And yeah, I wouldn't even advise Daniel to retire.
That's my thing with Daniel. How do you walk away from those two paydays? I mean, that to me is, you know, I mean, if you get the Brock fight, you know, in March, how do you walk away? And also, this has got to be saying that Jones beats Gustafsson in December, but I don't know how you walk away from that. But speaking of Daniel Cormier, Stipe Miocic on social media this week, sending a tweet to Daniel Cormier saying, quote, "I was available at MSG. I'm available now. When are we fighting? I will finish you." And Cormier responds with, quote, "Keep those fingers crossed that Lesnar doesn't fight, because if we do fight, you definitely won't like what's coming your way. I would definitely wouldn't want to be you in either fight. I'd rather fight me." You know, and I know I saw some speculation on Tuesday that potentially the UFC might be trying to potentially book Stipe versus Cain Velasquez. So, you know, Stipe, he's doing what he can to try to get Cormier in this fight. But, I mean, look, if you're Daniel Cormier, you're a part of Team Cormier. You're waiting to see what's going to happen with Brock and if he's truly going to come back.
Yeah, that's where the money is. And again, I don't think we see DC fight Stipe. I know he's talking smack, and I know he knows he can beat him, because he did. But for Daniel Cormier, it's real simple, Jason. There's only two fights left in his career, in my opinion, and it's against Jon Jones, and it's against Brock Lesnar.
I would say potentially three.
Well, do you think a Stipe rematch?
No.
Who?
Brock Jones saying he beats Jones.
A rematch.
And you go right back to another fight with Jones.
That's a great point. That is a hell of a point. If he does beat John Jones, there will be a rematch.
Oh, yeah. If he beats John Jones, how do you not, you know, just roll straight into the fourth fight?
Yeah, and then he's going to have the confidence that he can beat him again.
I mean, I said this on social media to somebody. I said, outside of Conor fighting, there is not a bigger fight the UFC could make in 2019 than Jones-Cormier.
Yeah, other than maybe Jones-Lesnar. That, to me, is the only, like, counter. Is
yeah, what, Jones, and I've said this, what happens if Brock says, oh, screw Cormier, I want to fight John Jones?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that fight has a little bit more sizzle on the stakes, so I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, maybe Cormier just needs to show up to every WWE television event that, yeah, that Brock's at.
Well, the good thing is Brock still has that WWE title, so.
I will say this, I don't watch the WWE product, but Becky Lynch's Twitter, oh my God. Oh, tremendous. When she clapped back at Rousey being knocked out in MMA, I was like, all right, you got me. Now I'm kind of interested.
Yeah, man, Becky Lynch. You know, the cool thing about the professional wrestling, the cool thing about the fight business, wrestling, fighting, boxing, you never know when a star's going to happen and they just come out of nowhere. And for wrestling, the pro wrestling world, Becky Lynch, she's become a star. It's crazy how things, they can just become mainstream. So yeah, yeah, she got, yeah.
She's she is, quote unquote, she's did over. She is O-V-E-R, all bold caps.
Did you see Ronda Rousey get the crap beat out of her by Charlotte Flair?
I did not know.
Oh, they did a wrestling angle after her match where Charlotte Flair, Rick's daughter, snapped and then hit Ronda with the kendo stick and beat the crap out of her with the kendo stick. I mean, really laid it in. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, the fight with Amanda Nunes, I mean, that hurt more. But this was definitely in between, like, some of her losses.
You, like, because I saw someone mention to me, they're like, oh, it looks like they're going to do Rousey, Becky Lynch now at WrestleMania. That, you know, I guess someone's telling me who follows it that the plan was initially that it was going to be Rousey and Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania. And I told this person, I said, if the WWE really wants to play this upright and really promote it, don't you have Becky Lynch bring Amanda Nunes and Holly Holm to help promote that fight?
Hell yeah, man. I mean, I don't think they're going to do that, but I mean, yeah, that would be cool. I think Ronda might put a nix in that.
Yeah, but I mean, man, if you wanted to put that match over, that's how you do it.
Yeah, that is definitely how you do it. The one caveat is those two women would remind the WWE audience that Ronda isn't the baddest woman on the planet. I don't know if you want to remind your audience.
Yeah, you're spot on. You're spot on there. But it is that portion of the show where you get to let you hear some of the interviews I've done recently. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Eric Anders, who's going to be a part of UFC 231 on December 8th. He's going to be taking on Elias Theodoro. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Martin Day, who fights on Saturday at UFC Fight Night 141. He'll be a part of the main card. Then you're going to hear Kevin Seiler, as he's got a fight on Saturday down in Bolivia. And then finally, you're going to hear my conversation with Dom Merriweather, who's going to be fighting next Wednesday at Alaska FC 143 on UFC Fight Pass. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, man steps back into the cage. UFC 231, December the 8th, up in Toronto. The man that's always said he wants to be a world traveler, Eric Anders. Eric, man, I appreciate the time, man. I saw you were just out in Denver. What kind of led you to go out there and do some training?
My manager, just Jason House, he hit me up, said that, there were just a bunch of people out there that, you know, during the fight week, there's really not a lot to do. You know, the fighters need to make weight, but, you know, it's not like a normal day where they're training 4, 5, 6 hours a day. You know, they probably work out an hour or two a day. And so some of those guys like Eddie Chau, Mark Montoya, Benson Henderson, they had some free time on their hands. And what do you call it? They wanted to work with me a little bit. So I, went out there, trained a little bit and got some good work.
And, of course, you mentioned some names there. Obviously, people are familiar with Eddie Chau, is a guy that I had on, Factory X, man. That's a gym that's been on an absolute roll. I know you've gone out and trained at other gyms across the nation. Is that one of those things that you kind of try to maybe, you know, pick and choose things they do and to bring back to your home gym?
Yeah, you know, I think that everybody's got something to offer. you know, whether it be your – I also did some, you know, worked with Dwayne Ludwig while I was out there. So, you know, everybody's got something to offer you. You know, I think the MMA is a constantly evolving sport, and it's, will, you know, forever be that way. So I think that you have to go out and train and see, you know, work with other minds and other bodies to, you know, fully encompass everything that is MMA.
Of course, you know, you took that short notice fight back in September. Doesn't go your way. I think you know, you made light of yourself on Instagram about kind of how that fight ended with having been that tire since your wedding night. I mean, is there anything you point to in taking that short notice fight that you kind of, you know, learn your lesson from in case that opportunity comes up again?
Man, I think, you know, there were just a lot of variables that happened in that fight. I think if just one of those variables changes, like if I don't fight a month before, if I have more than 6 days to prepare for an opponent, I think I win that fight. You know, I think that, you know, I had my moments. I had his back. You know, I, you know, took him down several times. I had him mounted at one point. There were just several opportunities that, you know, without, I was training before that fight, you know, my just not really necessarily like my cardio and my diet and stuff, which, you know, those things play a big role into the performance. So I would definitely, absolutely take a short notice fight like that again, you know, but it, probably not that close to, you know, a fight. And not just a fight, man, you know, that Tim Williams fight, you know, that's probably the most damage I had taken in a fight before the Thiago fight. So I'm almost certain that, you know, my nose was broke at that point, that, you know, that definitely hurts the cardio and stuff. So, you know, if just one of those variable changes, I think I come out on top in that fight.
Is that one of those fights that it's tough to get over? Because you look back on it and say, man, I was in good positions. Is that type of thing just as an athlete that you look at more than as opposed to, hey, I got this great, you know, knockout of Tim Williams?
You know, To be honest, you know, I went out on my shield, and that's how I prefer to go out. So, you know, I slept soundly. You know, I haven't lost a night of sleep over it. It's the losses like the Machida fight. Those are the ones that you dwell on, because, you know, much like I had opportunities in the Thiago fight, I also had opportunities against Machida. Very close fight. If I had done just a little bit more, if I, you know, press the action, if I, you know, just done just a little bit more, like I said, you know, I come out on top of that fight. So I think whenever you lose a decision and you don't do all that you can, you know, that's what, you know, for me anyways, that's what, you know, hurts me. But, you know, if I go out there and, you know, I perform like I did against Thiago and I go out on my shield, you know, I'm cool with that. That's part of the game.
How would you describe this year for you in terms of your MMA career?
You know, as far as like the career goes, you know, it's, you know, I'm upside down right now. You know, I'm 1-2 this year. So, you know, I don't think it's, you know, obviously it's not that great. Definitely a big step up in competition. Lost to Machida, lost to Thiago. But I think the internet and the fans, you know, appreciate the way I fight and what I do. My popularity is, you know, double at least. Especially after the Thiago fight. So, you know, it's it depends, you know, what aspect of, you know, the career you're looking at. If you're looking at the record, not so good. If you're looking at opportunities and popularity, you know, it's going pretty well.
Yeah, with that last fight, you know, being at 205 pounds, was there ever a thought, I don't know, a day, two, maybe even after the fight, you're like, maybe I should fight at 205?
Not man, you know, I love fighting, and you know, I'll fight at 205. I'm definitely down for that. I've definitely let that be known. You know, I've told Mick that, Mick Maynard, Dana, everybody knows Eric Anders is down for a scrap. So, you know, I'll fight at 205, but I think for longevity in my career, 185 is the way to go.
And of course, now you got Elias Theodoro. This is a fight that I feel like we've been talking about for some time now. It does take place here up at UFC 231 in Toronto. How would you say you are similar and different from Elias?
Similar. I don't think there's a whole lot of similarities in our game at all. You know, I come in there, I try to finish fights. I'm not looking to edge out decisions. Differences, you know, he moves a lot. You know, he's got a lot of output. I'm more of a lower output guy. You know, definitely something I'm changing in my game. I need that more output, so I don't, you know, those Machida decisions don't happen anymore. So more out, you know, he moves a lot. You know, I don't think that I'm not sure like what style to, you know, to put to him, because, you know, he's not really a kickboxer. He's not really a wrestler. You know, he just kind of moves around and points people up. And that's where I think we're opposites, to be honest with you.
In terms of that higher output, is that more mental than physical?
I think it's definitely something you have to train for. Because if you look at his fights, guys are in there in the, you know, in the first round, and you know they tend to fade, and you know he kind of keeps the pace steady. You know, it's not like he's got a super high output at times and then low output at times. It's pretty constant and consistent. You know, throughout the three rounds. So I don't think it's a mental thing. It's just something you got to be prepared for and aware of.
What do you think makes him dangerous as an athlete? Is it just that kind of movement of kind of, you know, coming at different angles?
I think he's more athletic than people give him credit for. I think he's more crafty than people give him credit for. But I don't think he's, you know, great at anything, or, you know, he's good at winning fights, you know, which at the end of the day is, you know, what we're here to do.
In terms of people not giving him a credit, is there anything that you believe you do that people don't give you enough credit for?
Man, you know, I really don't pay attention to what people say about me, to be honest with you. But I would think that, you know, my footwork and movement is a little bit different. You know, the way it looks like on TV versus what it looks like when you're in front of me, I think, is not the same, and, you know, kind of throws people off a little bit, because I think they just, on film, it looks like I just kind of plop forward, and throw a left hand. But, you know, there's a lot of going on, changing levels. I'm not ever just moving just straight, you know, I'm, you know, moving off on slight angles and whatnot. So I think it's a little bit different once you get in front of me.
Do you think that's a credit to your football days of kind of how you had to use your footwork to rush the quarterback?
I think the rushing the quarterback, the footwork involved in that, and the footwork involved in boxing, kickboxing, wrestling, and wrestling are totally different. There's a lot more angles, I think. And you can really, like, you know, in football, it's a sprint, you know. You're trying to get to the quarterback in, you know, less than two and a half seconds or 3 seconds or whatever. MMA, you know, you got 15 minutes to kind of get in there, and it doesn't have to be a knockout shot. It's not a sprint. You know, it's forward, backwards, left, right, you know, off on angles and whatnot. So, you know, playing linebacker is not really the same. I think that defensive backs, corners, and safeties, I think it applies and transitions better than linebacker does.
Final thing, Eric, as always, I appreciate the time. If you had to label out just one of obviously many keys to win this fight, what would that key be?
I need to be the one that, you know, and this is what I do anyways, be the one putting the pressure, you know, make him back up. You know, I think that he does a good job of other fighters of, you know, kind of getting in and out. So I need to set the trap and land big shots.
And, of course, let everyone know they can follow you on social media and, you know, the people, the sponsors that help support you.
Yeah, absolutely. Facebook, Eric Anders, MMA. Twitter, Instagram, at Eric Anders, E-R-Y-K-A-N-D-E-R-S. And a big shout-out to Rev Gear, Infinite CBD, and Vitamin Energy.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to make his UFC debut come on Saturday, November the 24th. UFC Fight Night 141, Martin Day back on the program. Martin, I appreciate the time. Obviously, the dream of getting that UFC call has come after, you know, you've been on a nice little roll here. Talk to me a little bit about the emotions of when your manager gives you the call to let you know that you've got a UFC offer.
Yeah, there's a lot of emotions that go through your head right there. You know, there's just so much work that goes into this, so much sacrifices that we have to make as fighters to get to this level. And to get this call is a dream come true. So, you know, the main emotion that goes through is happiness, you know, so much happiness. And yeah, bro. It's just like pretty much tears of joy. You know what I mean? Because like I said, so much hard work. You know, so much early mornings and late nights. So it's just it's a good feeling for sure.
Who's the first person you gave a call to let them know that you're going to be fighting in the UFC?
That would be my fiance. She always said she wanted to be the first to know, so, and she deserves to be the first to know. So she was the first call right when I found out.
So was Russell Doane the number two phone call? Because I you know, you wrote your Instagram recently, mentor, you know, a guy that you really lean on. I mean, was he the number two call?
He was up there. I mean, he was definitely one of the first calls. I don't think I even had to call him though. I think Charles told him before I did. But I think he might have even known before I knew. So, but yeah, he was one of the first guys to find out for sure.
As you think about the last 12 months, unfortunately, you're unable to get that win on the Contender Series, but you've been on a nice little roll. I mean, how would you describe kind of this journey, you know, since what happened last August, where you're at now?
It's been good. My Contender Series loss was a good experience for me. I learned a lot from that fight. I had a tough break on the decision of the fight. You know, it didn't go my way, obviously. But yeah, the main thing is that I took a lot from that fight. I learned a lot from it. And, you know, I went on a roll, three fight winning streak right after that, two finishes. So, yeah, you know, as long as you just take your wins and your losses and you learn from them, that's the main thing. You know, you can't let your losses get you down or stop you from your goals.
You know, obviously a short notice opportunity here. What would you say is, generally speaking, the pros and the cons of taking a short notice fight?
Pros, I'll have to think about that one. But I'm always in the gym, so, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm always in shape. I'm not coming off the couch or anything. But the cons are the obvious, you know, you don't, the diet for one, you know, when you have 6 weeks, you have a set diet you can get on to get on weight. It's hard to stay on a fight camp diet when you're not in a fight camp. Any fighter can relate to that. There's also, of course, the training aspect. You know, if you have an opponent 6 weeks to 8 weeks out, you have a specific game plan in place and you can implement that for a longer time period. Right now, we had about 3 weeks. We implemented it for that. But it doesn't matter, like I said, because I use all my skills as a martial artist to come out with the win. And this is something I've been training for my whole life. So, you know, a 6 week camp doesn't make too much of a difference.
And you got an opponent here. He's 1-0 in the UFC. He's coming off the decision win against Damian Stasiak back in July. You know, obviously, I'm sure right when you get the phone call from your manager, hey, this is the opponent. You and your team are going right to work. Okay, let's break him down as an opponent for you. And your team, what sticks out to him about what makes this, you know, a challenging fight for you?
Everybody in the UFC is going to be a challenging fight. You know, you can't sleep on anybody in there. That's why they're the best of the best over there. But I belong right with them. And, you know, we're going to be able to break down. We've broken them down well in the training camp, and I'm going to break them down even better during the fight. Yeah, so, you know, like I said, everyone at this level is going to be the best of the best. And I'm ready to rise to the occasion.
You know, we always hear about UFC jitters, pressure, you know, things along those lines. But I think everyone kind of knows there's pressure no matter, you know, what the opponent is. But for you, has there ever been a moment where you've kind of walked into a fight and it's kind of led on the years where you just kind of feel at home, you know, when that cage door shuts?
That's exactly what's going to happen next week, Saturday. I'm going to feel right at home as if this is where I was meant to be, because it is. So the pressure I feel is when you let other sources get to you. You know, it's an internal thing. So pressure is fear of failure is what it is. I'm not going to go out there afraid to fail. You know, fear of failure actually, it stops your performance completely. So I'm going to go out there and I'm going to have fun. And that's the main thing. Go out there, have fun. Like I said, that's where I belong, and I'm going to prove it.
You know, in terms of having fun, I mean, I've heard that, you know, from fighters all the time. Do you remember the moment when you're like, okay, I'm having fun doing this? And maybe to the point of maybe you weren't thinking as much when you were inside the cage?
Yeah, absolutely. And the times where I think back on those instances during a fight where I'm having fun and I'm letting it all loose and I'm putting it together, those are the times when I'm having the most success in the cage. And it's because when you're afraid to fail, when you put pressure on yourself, that's when your body actually, there's actual physical responses to fear. And, you know, you can look it up, but it stops you from doing what you want to do, you know. So when you're having fun, you're letting loose, that's when you're at your best. And that's when I've been at my best. And that's what I plan to do next week.
In terms of a key to victory in this match, if you just had to label out one key for yourself of what you need to do to walk away with the victory, what would one of those keys be?
Strike, as usual, and defend the takedowns. That's it. You can't strike with me. Nobody can strike with me. And I'll prove that on Saturday next week.
Do you view this fight as a little bit of a reintroduction of yourself from that Contender Series fight?
Yeah, you know, now that you bring it up, I think I do. That Contender Series fight, I've gotten so much better than. If I were to fight that guy, that version of myself that fought in the Contender Series, I would whip my butt. You know what I mean? The guy today would whip that guy's butt. So I've improved a lot from that. And on that fight, we took it on such short notice and overcame some adversity, you know, just to make it to the cage, not to mention, you know, what went on in the cage. So yeah, you know, it's kind of a reintroduction, and I plan on making it a good one.
Are you as, I mean, obviously physically you're, you know, you've evolved as a martial artist, but how much would you say you are a mentally different fighter now as opposed to, you know, 12 months ago?
Improved, definitely improved. You know, 12 months ago, 4 years ago, I made my pro debut. So if you just look at how far I've come since then, now, in the last 12 months, it's probably just as far as the previous 3 years. I've come a long way since this Contender Series fight 12 months ago, and mentally, I'm in a stronger mental state. So, one second, I got a call coming in. All right, yeah. So I'm mentally, I'm tough, I'm strong, and ready to do this.
What do you remember most about that pro debut 4 years ago?
It was a tough one. I mean, we were training for a tall, lanky southpaw striker, and 1 week away from the fight, not a southpaw striker. We were training for a regular stance striker, like a kickboxer guy, real tall. And then about a week from the fight, I get actually I think it was less than a week. It was very short notice for him. He didn't have much of a camp, but he was the man. He did real good. He was totally the opposite though. He was like a southpaw jiu-jitsu wrestler guy. So we went in there and, you know, I overcame some major adversity in the first round, but I ended up outstriking him and coming away with the split decision win. Probably to this day, the hardest fight of my career.
You know, is that one of those things that you just kind of you look at and say, man, I'm glad I had that as my first fight because it really kind of helped me, you know, maybe advance yourself quicker than maybe if you didn't have that fight?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I grew leaps and bounds from that fight, physically and mentally. I became so much better of a fighter and a stronger person in general from that fight. That's the kind of fights right there that really, you know, comes down to it. You see what kind of man you are. So, you know, I came out on top on that one. I had to dig deep, but, you know, I made it happen.
And of course, everyone's going to be able to watch your fight on Saturday, November the 24th, live on UFC Fight Pass, UFC Fight Night 141. Martin, as always, I appreciate time. Let them know where they can follow you on social media, and let them know about the sponsors that help support you.
Yeah, guys, you can follow me on Instagram at 34Spartan, Twitter at MartinDay_, and I have so many sponsors, you know, that you guys are such a huge help to me during my training camp, and just during the whole process, guys. I love you, my sponsors. Thank you so much for always supporting me. And my main supporter, of course, my fiance, Ashley. You know, huge shout out to her. She's my main support system. I love her very much. And yeah, man, that's it. I'm ready to do it.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man we had on the program earlier this year, and he's got a fight coming up here on November the 24th down in Bolivia. It is Kevin Siler, 7-0 in his career, takes on Marcelo Bustos in the co-main event of this fight card. As always, man, I appreciate time. What's been going on since April?
Thanks for having me, Fergal. Since April, I fought down here in Bolivia, then I did a small exhibition boxing fight. It wasn't pro. It wasn't amateur. It was like a modified rules fight. I did that like a month later after April. got some good experience, got the win, and then went back to the States to train at ATT. We were looking for a fight earlier than this one, but it didn't happen. Just fights fell through. Not the right events, not the right call. And as soon as this event popped up, I talked to the matchmaker, which is my friend also, and we got it done. My original opponent was from Brazil. He was 3-1, and he had to drop out like 2 weeks before. And I got the opponent change, which is, I think, a lot tougher matchup. But I'm happy. I'm happy that it went down like that, because I think it's a better challenge for me.
And, of course, you mentioned about that mixed rules boxing match. So what were the rules of the fight?
It wasn't mixed rules. It was like a mix between amateur boxing and pro boxing. Like, it was no head guard, but it was 3 rounds. And there were some other things. The gloves, I'm not sure what the pro gloves are, but they were definitely a little bigger. So it was like a mix between both. And it was against a local kid, a boxing champ down here. It was like a MMA versus boxing challenge.
Oh, very cool. Was that just something more? It was a way to challenge yourself?
Yeah, I think it was a way to challenge myself. By the way, you can watch that fight on my Facebook fan page and Instagram. I was going to come back to the States, and I was getting some good striking training down here. And I said, I'm going to go back to do the same thing. I might do a little detour, and I got this fight offered. And yeah, it was a challenge. It was fun to just throw hands for a whole camp and just concentrate on that. I gotta say, it wasn't easier, but it was more simple. There wasn't that many unpredictable factors involved.
I gotta ask about the English translation of your nickname. Now, I put it in the Google, and a couple of different things came up. So can you tell me what actually your nickname translates into English?
Can I ask you what did it say when you
was the boy, and the other one was the what was it? It started with a B. I forget what it was. Bullet? The bullet, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically the bullet kid. That's what it means. I got it a while ago, because my cousin used to make fun of me because I was a teenager and I was small and chubby. And I wasn't athletic at all, and he would call me like the bullet kid, just to kind of like say the opposite, like, of what you are, just ironically. And he would tell me that, and I would get pissed. And when I got really good at fighting, I finally told him that now I'm the real bullet kid, and that kind of stuck, you know. And it sounds good, you know. It sounds pretty good to me.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here. Is your brother Bentley now a doctor?
Well, he was a doctor already when he fought in the UFC. Actually, he's the first and only to do it. I believe. I'm 90% sure that he is the first to do it. He was already a doctor, but he didn't have a. He didn't like follow up after. He decided to go through the fighting first, because he had those few precious years left. And he wanted to follow the dream and see what he could make of it. And after the UFC, he finally decided to go through, and he's working on his residency right now and trying to get work in the States.
While this is an individual sport, there's a lot of people around you that are helping and helping you grow. What is the role of the lady in your life play in your career?
Man, she's been nothing but supportive since I met her. She was always cool with it. She's never really strayed me away from fighting. She does get nervous, but yeah, you know what? Like, it might be difficult to have a long distance relationship, but actually, it helps me so much with the camps when I go home. You know, I know she's not there in person, but I know there's someone that really wants to hear out my day and really wants to talk to me, and like that I'm the most important person to talk with. at that night. So that's very good for me. She's an important person, not only in the fighting but in my life.
You mentioned about the change of opponent here, which by the way is a co-main event. Marcelo, 11-8 in his career, obviously has got a lot of experience. Mm-hmm. As you have gotten yourself ready for this matchup, how is he a different opponent than anybody else that you fought up to this point?
I think he's very similar to a lot of opponents I've fought. He's different just because he's a different person, but I think I've fought guys like him before. The Argentinian scrappy style, very tough, very down to exchange. You know, they don't fear anyone. They just take the fights and fight their best, and that's the way he is. He hits hard. He actually fought the last opponent I beat. He fought him, and actually the other guy beat him. That was a while ago, though. I'm not judging him by that fight. I think he's looked a lot better lately, and just a tough challenge. Like you said, he's got a lot of experience. He's beat a good coach of mine. He's telling me like he's beat 11 people. So you gotta be on your game.
What would you label out a key to victory for you in this matchup?
I think I'm gonna try to show my stand up a little bit more. You know, I think people think I'm a submission fighter because of my record, but my striking is my best area, and I'm just gonna see what it's like in the stand up, and whatever that takes me, if I have to take him down or if I continue to outstrike him, I'll take that. You know,
have you ever felt that people underestimate your striking, you know, to this point?
I think in general, yeah, they might. Generally, the people that don't know me or the fans or whatever don't really know how good of a striker I am, but the people in the gym know, and the people that know me know. I have one of the best stand-ups, I think, in the division, you know, like worldwide. I know that because I train with the best guys, so I know I'm really good, and I haven't been able to show it in the cage because it's just never been the safest route. You know, I always get these strikers, and I feel I'm so much better in the grappling that I take them down. But I think once I get to that upper level, I think that's where I'm going to really have to rely on it, and we're going to see it more, you know?
Would you think it's kind of a good thing because in terms of people really haven't necessarily seen a lot of it, that it's just such this unknown of like, it's like this secret you have that at some point it's going to come out, but hey, maybe it's a good thing that secret hasn't come out yet.
It was a good thing before when I was more of an amateur and newer pro, but I think as of now, I would rather people to know because you know what, like the bigger shows are trying to get exciting people, and my record doesn't really stand out because of the bunch of submissions I have. So I would have liked by now to show it more because I'm not trying to hide anything anymore. Like it was good for those times, but now I think it's gotta be shown, and that's what's gonna get me, you know, more noticed if I really show what happened in the striking.
And of course, this fight goes down on Saturday, November the 24th, Combate Bolivia. Kevin, as always, I appreciate the time. Let everyone know they can follow you on social media and the sponsors that help support you.
Yeah, just follow my Instagram page, Kevin Seiler, and my Facebook page to always be up to date of what's happening. I'm pretty active. Don't forget to tune in for this fight. I don't know if I'm going to have a link, but I will make sure. I always make sure to post the video as soon as possible after the fight.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report podcast is a man we've had on the show plenty of times before, and he's got a fight coming up here in a week at Alaska FC 143 on UFC Fight Pass. It's Dom Meriwether. He's going to look to improve to 7-1 in his career. Dom, as always, I appreciate the time. The last fight, standing guillotine, maybe power guillotine, maybe about the best way to put it. You know, as you just kind of think about that fight, I mean, how do you assess your own performance?
Well, you know, we didn't have any animosity towards David. It was kind of hard to fight someone that we actually liked. So there's a lot of ways I could have finished the fight earlier. But, you know, David is a family man. He has a family. He has kids to take care of. We all have something to, you know, to do after this fight's done. When I got David on the ground, he did his, I don't know what to call it. It's a traditional block for boxing, but he was on his back. And so I took advantage of that and tried to just keep hitting his elbows and hope the ref would stop it to cause, you know, the minimal amount of damage to David and try and get the fight done with. Then he got up and he gave me his head and I just cranked it. It was there. So there was no damage done there. And, you know, it's definitely tough fighting somebody that you that you're friends with, that you're cool with, that you're civil with, someone that has a family. You know, like I'm very sensitive when it comes to people who have kids and a family to take care of. Even if I don't like him, you know, but you know, I don't like Cliff White, and Cliff White doesn't have kids. So I don't care if he's hurt. I don't care what happens to him. You know, there's some speculations about, things that he's done that I don't agree with that tie into my past that made me the person I am. So, you know, I'm going in there and it's kill, kill, kill every single minute. And he better be ready. So.
In talking about not liking him, you know, personally speaking, would you say this fight?
You know, I called Cliff out when I was 1-0. That was in 2015. He was 3-1. He wouldn't accept the fight. And then when I started winning, he would comment on every single picture that was posted about me saying, you know, Mocha Bear is the winner in this round. He's like, oh, I want to fight him. I want to fight him. And then the guy slides into my DMs like a thirsty schoolgirl. And he's like, talking about me fighting him in Juneau and stuff like that for the 145 belt, but he never steps up. He just keeps saying it over and over and over again. And then I wanted to fight. I was like, all right, let's get this fight. And so I was confirmed on my side and we were waiting for him. He was still messaging me telling me the fight was confirmed, but the promoter hadn't heard anything from him. So it's just frustrating. It's just this cat and mouse game with him and a lot of the Juneau fighters. And you know, then he decides to message me again after the fight's confirmed saying, you know, just to let you know that you called me out first. I was like, I never said it otherwise. I told him exactly what happened. Then he tried saying that there was a fight locked in between us both already in a different year that I pulled out of. And I was like, I've never pulled out of a fight. I fought every single fight, even with injuries, I fought, you know. And I was like, we can contact Sarah and ask her. Because I was never scheduled to fight you. I've never fought in a January. I've never tried to fight in January. I've never cared to fight in January. So the fact that you're saying that I pulled out of a fight in January makes no sense, because everybody knows that I love to fight in November and I love to fight in May, and statistics show that exactly. And then he just said okay and left it alone, and I just told him to be ready. But you know, this is a fight that you know everyone's going to see the brutality that I can cause. I'm going to hurt him in every single aspect of the word. I do not like this kid at all. I hate him more than I, you know, dislike Novelli. I don't like Cliff White. I think Cliff White's a punk ass, and I'm there to hurt him. So
is this the first time a potential opponent or opponent has done the whole slid into your DMs?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm all about the trash talk. I don't care about the trash talk, but like, you know, he wants to slide into my messenger and then act like he's this noble native warrior to all of his fans. And he's not this noble native warrior. He's an alcoholic, and he, you know, I shouldn't be talking about him like that, but he's not a good person. He acts like he's this good person. He's not. And he's going to pay. Like there's, you know, I just posted on Instagram for everyone on my story. And I asked everybody how they want this fight. Do you want him punished or you want me to finish him? And I'm, you know, even if he's getting finished, he's going to get punished. I'm going to punish him. He has nothing for me. I've trained harder than him. You know, he can't take me down. His striking's good, but I'm going to move around. I'm going to bounce around. I'm going to pepper him up. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure he does not want to fight in Anchorage again. He's going to stick to his little Juneau show and stay there.
You know, I mean, you mentioned about some of the things that he does. You mentioned striking. You mentioned the judo. I mean, do you believe judo is his biggest strength that he offers?
Judo?
Yeah.
No, I said judo.
Oh, judo. Oh, judo. Excuse
me. Judo, Alaska. Yeah.
Excuse me. I misheard you on that one.
I'm not sure how his grappling is. I'm just very confident in my own. I have the best grapplers to train with in the state. My coach is Ryder and my brother Chris. That, you know, they're both black belts and they're monsters. And I train with them, and I'm just not worried about it. You know, if he takes me down, he takes me down. I can work off my back, but it's going to take a lot of effort to get me on the ground. And if that's what he wants to do, then more power to him. I'm okay with it. Let's go there. So,
you know, it seems more recently when I talk to various fighters, no matter whether they're fighting here in the United States or, you know, overseas, they kind of talked about, you know, really the mindset. It seems to be changing where it felt like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, fighters were like really talking about what their opponent does well and how I have to counter that and things. But now it seems like it's more of fighters are like, you know what? Yes, I'm aware of what my opponent does, but this is about me. I mean, is that the same way for you?
You know, yeah, I would say so, because we train real hard in all aspects. We don't train, like, my coaches don't have me training for their weakness. We train to be ready everywhere, and with that being said, we're okay to fight everywhere. We're, you know, there's fear is something that limits you when you're actually competing. And you know, I was taught that fear means fuck everything and run. And I'm not running from anybody. I'm there and I'm going to stay there. Everybody thought I was going to retire after my arm broke and that I had to retire, that injury stopped me. But look at me now. I mean, I just won a fight against David Booker. Then I won the state grappling tournament. Now I'm fighting Cliff White. I'm going to finish the season strong and everyone can see me now.
And Mary, we talked about that broken arm and coming back. I mean, how would you say you are mentally different now as opposed to maybe even just you know, the fight against David?
I know I can get hurt. I know I can get hurt. I know that broken arm caused a lot of issues in my life. It was hard to sit down for 8 months. It was, I almost lost my job because I'm a merchandiser and I can't lift things. I was, you know, I merched with a broken arm. You know, I was just lifting things with one arm. I kept up. You know, I got a lot of, depression built up because, I wasn't able to train. I wasn't able to be active and I'm a very active person. So it was hard. You know, I wanted to be in the gym and just watch the jiu-jitsu and, you know, pay attention to class, but I couldn't do that in a hot area with the actual cast. Cause then I'm sweating inside my cast and that's gross. So, it caused a lot of issues in my life, nothing that I couldn't handle, nothing that I haven't dealt with before, but it was definitely not an ideal situation, but it was something that God put in front of me for me to climb over. And I did. And look at me now.
You mentioned about the schedule you like to have in terms of fighting May, November, that's the schedule of the be on. I mean, have you thought about, you know, what 2019 holds for you and kind of, you know, have you set any personal goals of what you want to achieve?
Well, you know, I would like to get signed somewhere in 2019. That'd be ideal. I fight November and May in Alaska just because those are big military appreciation months. And I have a lot of support for my first responders and the people fighting for our country. And so that gives me the opportunity to fight for them while they just sit down and enjoy beer for once and realize that we actually care about them. A lot of people don't give our first responders and our military troops support and the kudos that they deserve. These people are out there fighting to make sure that we can do what we want here. And they're, you know, some of these people don't even get to see their kids born. They don't get to spend time with their kids for a year, you know, and it's bull. So I'm all about supporting them. And every May and November, if I'm fighting, you guys can be sure to sit down and drink a beer and enjoy it. Cause I'm going to put on a show for you guys to watch while I cause some carnage. So.
And, of course, it all goes down on Wednesday, November the 28th, Alaska FC 143, of course, live on UFC Fight Pass. Dom, as always, man, I appreciate time. Let everyone know they can follow you on social media and the sponsors that help support you.
Oh, man, my sponsor list is huge. I'm going to make a video for them here in the next couple of days. But I definitely want to shout out my my management team, Iridium Sports Agency, and then my gym, Anchorage Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And you can find me on all sources of social media at Roka Barrett MMA, all one word.
And there was my conversation with Eric Anders, Martin Day, Kevin Seiler, and Dom Merriweather. I appreciate all those fighters taking some time out of their days to talk to me. Good luck to all of them in their upcoming fights. But right now, we are going to get into Bellator 209 that took place last Thursday in Israel. Of course, an event that aired via tape delay on the Paramount Network and DAZN. Want to give some props to DAZN. Did not watch this event. One of the things I don't watch these tape delay events on Paramount for the most part, because I just know they are going to jam pack commercials into these things. You know, once around in, you're not getting that minute commercial. You're getting 2 to 3 minutes of a commercial. So went on DAZN. They actually had the car broken down the fights, which I thought was really cool. Even though on the Phil Davis Nemkov fight, the individual fight only had the first two rounds, so I had to go into the entire event replay to watch it. But that was definitely the big surprise of the night, Daniel Nemkov getting that split decision win. And when you're talking about just, if you're looking for a great fight to go back and watch, Pitbull and Emmanuel Sanchez, I just thought that was a great fight.
Oh, just a phenomenal fight. I mean, this was a really great international card. After watching it, dude, great card. A bit of a longer card, main card, only one finish, but a lot of things were notable from the start to the end, and it ended in a great way. A fantastic fight that really was a nice positive for the featherweight division, because like Emmanuel Sanchez and Patricio Pitbull, these two guys are going to have to fight again. I mean, maybe not next, just because it might be Pitbull versus Caldwell. But before Aaron Pico gets to his featherweight throne, we need to see Pitbull and Sanchez again. I don't know if you go Pitbull-Sanchez rematch or you go Pitbull-Caldwell, but this was just a phenomenal fight. Guys, if you haven't seen it, I would implore you to watch it on DAZN. It's just an awesome back-and-forth contest. It's entertaining, and it's great. And if you're an Emmanuel Sanchez fan, I mean, you could watch it with those Emmanuel Sanchez sunglasses and come away thinking he outpointed Pitbull. I mean, I wouldn't. I don't agree with that. But it was a great fight, and I need to see a rematch.
Yeah, it's one of those fights after I watched, I was like, this is pretty much a lot of Pitbull fights I seem to walk away from going, yep, those guys are going to fight again, just because of how close it was. So on Saturday, I see this tweet about from Sebastian Rodriguez, who was over there covering the event, and he was tweeting out various things that Scott Coker said after the event. And I want to read you this tweet. It says, quote, and this is from Scott Coker, if the UFC wants to counter our heavyweight Grand Prix finals and jump on our date, that's fine. But keep in mind, their event will be on pay-per-view and ours is free. You can watch the GOAT versus the greatest pound-for-pound fighter, Fedor versus Bader. The fans have a choice. Two things to mention about this one, and I tweeted about it, and I quoted the tweet where I said, quote, I've said this many times, and I will continue to say it. Bellator is not a free product. You have to pay for cable or DAZN membership to watch the product, unless you're watching an illegal stream. Anyone who says it's free, you need to ask how it's free. Now, I am actually cutting the cord this week, basically because DirecTV wanted to raise my bill $30 bucks a month after my 2 years of contract is ending with them. So I've actually got YouTube TV, really impressed with what I've got. The stream quality is amazing. The channels I want, all there. I get the Fox Sports regional channel so I can watch the Lightning and Magic play. Man, heartbreaker for the Magic last night against the Raptors. It's just a big pet peeve of mine. But I really think the bigger part of that whole tweet, Daniel, is the end of it where Coker allegedly says, you can watch the GOAT versus the greatest pound-for-pound fighter. Fans have the choice. Are you effing kidding me?
Yeah. Look, man, you're a promoter. You know, you got to BS. But here's the thing you can expect out of this podcast. When we see promoters spout BS, we will inspect it. There was a point in time where Fedor could be considered the greatest of all time. That point in time ended after Fabricio Verdum tapped him out. Fedor is a legend, but definitely not the GOAT.
No. Okay. So if you're saying the GOAT is Fedor.
Uh-huh.
You're really trying to spout Ryan Bader as the greatest pound-for-pound fighter? Seriously? Look, this is no if Ryan Bader's listening to this, or anyone in Ryan Bader's circle is listening to this, this is not a disrespect for Ryan Bader. Ryan Bader's a very good fighter, but he's not in the conversation for greatest pound-for-pound fighter. Sorry, he's not.
he is a fantastic fighter. He's a great guy. He has elevated his game since going to Bellator. He was my pick to win the tournament. But again, like, not the pound for pound. Like, his win over Phil Davis was great. But hell, after watching the fight card, that win has maybe gone down a few notches in terms of how impressive it was.
Here's the thing, because you have to put the entire body of work together. If you look at Ryan Bader's quality of work, when you say best wins in his career, you would put, you know, the Phil Davis wins up there. You have to, even though both of them weren't exactly exciting fights. You would look at a win against Rashad Evans, but after that, who would be his best win? I mean, a pretty much injured Quentin Jackson back in 2012?
Yeah, it's just not the resume you think of when it comes to best pound for pound fight. I mean, he's not even a top three guy in light heavyweight today. So, I mean, it's hard. How could you possibly say that when you have a guy like DC?
Well, I mean, remember, every time in the UFC, he got that big step up in competition, he lost John Jones, Lyoto Machida, Glover Teixeira, Anthony Johnson. You know, and so I understand a promoter being a promoter, but come on, you got to be honest here.
Yeah, you do. And at the end of the
like,
day,
I hope that's a misquote. I really hope that's a misquote.
It probably isn't. But I mean, hell, even in Bellator, I would say Musasi's higher on the pound for pound list.
Oh, no question.
Yeah.
I would put Roy McDonald above Bader.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that one's a little more iffy because of the way he looked against Gegard.
Yeah, but I got to look at the greater body of work, not just one fight.
That's absolutely true. And yeah.
I mean, look, you know, January 26th, the combat sports fan's going to have a lot of options. I mean, you're going to have, you know, the UFC pay-per-view, which clearly the UFC is stacking the deck there. You've got the Bellator event, so if you have a cable subscription or a satellite subscription or a DAZN membership, you can watch that card. And PBC is going to have a show on Fox. So there's plenty of options out there for the combat sports fan. You know, and hey, look, it's competition makes everyone better. You know, I think we talked about it last week. And that Pico Corrales fight, that is a awesome fight on that card. Like, like that is one of those events where you're going to sit in your living room or you're going to go out to a sports bar and you're going to be watching all this stuff all at the same time.
Yeah, I think personally, that's how I'm going to consume it. And it's going to be, you know, I mean, this past week was subtle. It wasn't, but that week, oh my gosh, I'm going to have it on my laptop and my TV. I can't wait. But yeah, just a great way to, I'm so pumped for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just at the end of the day, I mean, look, you're going to, you know, the Bellator and the UFC, they're going to put their best foot forward to convince you to sit there and watch their fight on that night. I mean, it's a great night and you get to choose. You're going to see a lot of great fights and you can kind of go back and forth between the two cards and decide, you know, which one that you want to watch. That's, you know, to me, it's a win for the fight fan. And, but yeah, that combo, Scott Coker. Oh my God.
Yeah, that was awful. And again, it's like Bader beat Phil Davis.
Please tell me he was misquoted.
He had to have been. I mean, what are you going to tell me next? Ryan Couture, who looked fine against Haim Ghazali, is the best welterweight of all time. Get out of here.
Yeah. You know, and your next Bellator event, headlined by Alessio Sakara.
Well, let's not bury the lead here. Let's not bury Phil Davis. I mean, he got buried, but I mean, we saw him lose to Vadim Nemkov, Jason.
That's a big blow to him.
Yeah, we saw him get out wrestled in those first two rounds. What?
I mean, now you look at if you're Nemkov. I mean, now you're kind of sitting there going, okay, hey Ryan, when are you going to be ready to defend that title?
Yeah, I mean, that fight does not have money written all over it. Nemkov versus Bader, Jason. That doesn't have ratings bonanza, but Jesus, Vadim Nemkov, you know, he impressed me in that fight.
Yeah, no, he clearly impressed me. Any chance you're getting up early Saturday morning to watch UFC live?
Not no, but hell no. That is my answer, Jason.
Here's my question. And mm-hmm. Look, you know, nothing against the fighters. If you live on the East Coast of the United States and you are not getting paid to watch these fights live at 3:15 a.m., I want to know what's getting you to either stay up or get up that early?
I mean, you just got to be a hardcore MMA fan and you got to like the idea of watching this fight card in China.
Ooh.
And also here's the thing. Maybe you're just up, you know, maybe you're a night animal. And the thing is during those hours, it's not like there's a lot of competition. So if you happen to be awake, you might as well flip it on. But yeah, this isn't like appointment viewing. I mean, this is a one fight card with a couple of interesting things sprinkled around it.
You've got some fighters that stick out to you. I mean, the
women's strawweight fights are interesting to me.
Yeah, you know, you look at those prelims. What is Jessica Aguilar at this point in her career? That's something that sticks out to me. You know, Kevin Holland, kind of interested to see how he goes. Louis Smoka returning. You know, you look at that main card, which starts at 6:30 a.m. Eastern time. You got four fights. John Lean's going to kick it off. Always a fun fighter to watch. Vince Morales, who was on the podcast last week, he's on the main card. You've got Overeem in the co-main event. But look, everything is about the main event. And for Ngannou, look, it's a crossroads. There's no question about it. Like, you know, and I feel like people are counting him out. You know, the question ultimately is, and I don't see Curtis Blaydes trying to make this a striking fight. I think Curtis is going to try to get this fight to the ground. We all saw what happened the first time these two guys squared it up. But, I mean, man, I wonder if Curtis wins on Saturday, does the UFC cut Ngannou?
I think it definitely depends on how Ngannou fights and how he conducts himself. I mean, the fight against Lewis was awful. It was just an embarrassment. One of the more embarrassing moments on the UFC pay-per-view of the year. So Francis Ngannou, I mean, this is crazy because it wasn't long ago when he beat Blaydes. It was only a couple of years ago. And he had so much potential. But this is a guy who's really good. I mean, Crossroads is so perfect because he's at a moment where he needs to figure it out. Mm-hmm. How he wants to conduct himself, how he wants to prepare, how he wants to fight. Curtis Blaydes is a tough matchup for him. Even though Ngannou won, I think Blaydes is undoubtedly the favorite here. I think he's going to beat Ngannou, which says a lot.
Are you confident in that, though?
I'm not super confident because Ngannou, I do not forget how great Francis Ngannou looked in that run. He looked like a Terminator robot, and he looked like he had so much upside. So I'm not super confident, Jason, but I do know watching the last few Curtis Blaydes fights, watching the last Ngannou fight, I can envision the likelihood of him utilizing his wrestling to frustrate Ngannou, take him into deep waters, and beat him.
You're looking at the betting odds. So Ngannou, as we're recording this here on Thanksgiving Eve morning, +190, Curtis Blaydes -230. If you were going to put $100 down, would you feel more confident picking Francis Ngannou at +190 or Alistair Overeem at +100?
Wow. I'd go with Alistair Overeem against Sergey Pavlovich. Just because Sergey, again, is untested. And even though Alistair Overeem has looked like a bag of horse meat the past two fights, you know, just not looked great against Ngannou and Blaydes, he still has some degree of talent. And, I would put the money on Overeem, Jason.
You know, you look at Sergey, this is an undefeated fighter, 12-0. He's fought in Fight Nights Global. I think in terms of the hardcore MMA fan, they clearly know who he is, but it does stick out to you that the fact that the betting public has made him the favorite in this fight against Alistair Overeem. Overeem opened up at -135, and now he is the underdog at +100. There is some other pretty big odds on this one. Vince Morales is a nearly a 3.5-1 underdog. Other big, Lauren Murphy, she's a 4-1 favorite. Jessica Aguilar, nearly a 4-1 underdog. Maybe tells you a little bit about Jessica Aguilar. Kevin Holland, a big favorite against John Phillips. He's over a 4-1 favorite in that one. I mean, you know, look, this is, and by the way, for those wanting to know the betting odds on Chuck and Tito, Tito -265, Chuck Liddell +225. Oof, that 225 on Chuck is pretty interesting.
You know, don't do it, Jason. Do not put money. Show some self-control. You got to spend the money on Black Friday.
Oh, man. I'm not a Black Friday shopper. Cyber Monday, different story.
Yeah, that's who's right up your alley. I get that.
Oh, man, it's, yeah, I'm more, you know, but there's certain things I you can't shop for online. Like
condoms.
Clothes, shoes, furniture.
Yeah.
You know, because me and my wife are going to buy a new couch. And that's just something you can't buy online. You gotta go to the store. You got to sit in it. You got to see how it feels. So are you picking Blades against Ngannou?
Yes. Who are you picking?
I got to go Blades. I think he'll use his wrestling. Look, if Blades tries to prove he's the better striker, oof, guy, good chance that could not end good for him. But if he uses wrestling, he should win.
And what do you think about the Overeem fight?
I'm betting against Overeem, and it's more about Overeem than it is Sergey. I think where Alistair is at this point, that to me is the kind of why I would go against Overeem.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going with Overeem, but I agree with your sentiment. I understand why. I feel awful picking Overeem.
Yeah, but I will tell you, I can't wait for next week, the Ultimate Fighter finale. Now, not like I've watched any of the Ultimate Fighter, just being plain honest. But, man, you look at those top two fights in that fight card, RDA and Usman and Munoz and Brian Caraway. Man, really looking forward to that main event next week.
Talking about would watch that main event.
Oh, Usman, God, Sanios, yeah. Oh man, that is, oh yeah, sign me up to watch those two guys. I mean that should be an awesome fight, and we're in this big stretch of a bunch of UFC events, and of course we're 1 week closer to Holloway and Ortega. Should we just knock on wood that fight happens?
Yeah, we should buy a whole forest and knock on every tree.
Man, if you're the UFC, man, that's got to be your worst fear. You get a call from one of those managers who, oh my guy's got can't make it to the fight.
Ooh. Yeah, block their number. Just block it.
Yeah. By the way, do you get – I want to mention this. Do you get robocalls on your cell phone?
No, I do not.
You know what the scary thing about these robocalls is? Look, if I don't know the number, I don't answer. That's just plain. That's just the honest truth. If I don't know your number, you call me, you're getting my voicemail.
Yeah.
But so I was getting these calls, and they actually got through my – and they left a voicemail. I don't know how people fall for this crap. It was, I mean, clearly.
What was it like?
Well, first off, you know, they don't sound like a goddamn human talking. And it was talking about how they're going to cancel my social security number. And I'm like, that's impossible. And then I'm like, oh my God, people are falling for this.
Yeah. I mean, one a year.
That to me was like the scary part of that robocall, listening to that voicemail. I'm like, oh my God. And the thing I love about the iPhone is just blocking numbers.
It's so easy. I love it.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's awesome. But yeah, it's, I got that. I'm like, who the hell is falling for this crap?
I know. I mean, grandparents, old people, young people. Those are the two people.
Oh, I know. Like, that's like, I mean, I thought of my grandmother. I was like, I always feel like, I'm like, should I call my grandmother and go, please tell me you're not falling for this?
Yeah.
Please tell me you're not.
Yeah, so you got to protect your elderly.
Oh, my goodness. I listened to that stuff, and I'm just like, oh, my God. But, yeah. So yeah, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the podcast. Of course, coming up next week, we'll be talking about that Ultimate Fighter, the Usman and RDA fight. Also, got some interviews. Talked to a couple of Unified MMA fighters. Michael Hay and Craig Shintani, both part of that car that's going to be on December 7th. So we got that coming up. Also, we'll have some other interviews for you as well. So do want to thank Eric Anders, Martin Day, Kevin Seiler, and Dom Merriweather, all coming on this week's edition of the podcast. Of course, as always, you can check out this podcast every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com. And, of course, you can always get it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
The game of the weekend, Michigan-Ohio State. Huge matchup. It's going to decide the Big Ten East. Could, at least for Michigan, in my view, decide a spot into the national playoffs if they're able to parlay a win in Columbus with a win in the Big Ten championship game. I don't think any way which Michigan gets left out. And they went out. Ohio State may be a little different because of how they've looked. The eye test hasn't been kind to them. The Purdue game, the Maryland game, in which was a win. Don't know. But at this stage, it's all about the rivalry. It's all about getting to the Big Ten championship game. Going to be a lot of fun to watch this. Michigan is no doubt the better team going in. Offensively, they've been improved. They've done a better job of running it. They've done a good job working play action. This is a very attackable Ohio State defense. And defensively, Michigan's been very good. But the pressure of the moment, winning on the road in a game which you're favorite, Michigan's a little bit of a different spot. Michigan's been the better team, as I've said. I would expect Michigan's going to get Ohio State's best effort and best game. I don't know what that's going to do, but I think Ohio State will play their best. They look dysfunctional, quite frankly, to the Buckeyes. If they don't pull it together, this is a sign they've got some real problems internally, and we're going to have to watch things in Columbus into the offseason.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.